Now, Mr. Letts, perhaps you could again repeat your name, your address, and your telephone number.
I'm Richard Letts, the Director of Human Relations of St. Lansing, and my telephone number is 483, that is the work number, 483-4088. Home number is 482-4198.
All right. Could you tell me where you were born, Mr. Letts?
I was born here in Lansing.
In Lansing?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
My home.
What year or month?
No, that was 1922.
Oh, you're still quite a young
Well, I appreciate that. I try to be young in mind. I know the body's wearing out.
That can happen at any age. Were you educated here in Michigan?
Beg pardon?
Were you educated here in Michigan?
Yes, I went to school, elementary school, junior and high school, but I had my graduate studies at Wilberforce. That is a high school in Ohio, and before service, and then I went to service for 4 years overseas, and 2 years overseas, that is, in combat. And then I came back and went to Michigan State for a year, and then I got a job at West Virginia State University, and I finished my graduate schooling there and also coached boxing, so I had stipends and also served as in the athletic department. I was an undergraduate assistant training boxers and boxing coach.
What did you major in when you were in school?
I started out with pre-law, but because of so many experiences, so much social injustice in the South, than it was in the Army, and so much social injustice in the Army overseas by the segregated Army, I returned to school at Michigan State in Business and Public Service, and then down in West Virginia State, I finished up in Psychology and Sociology.
I see. What year did you graduate from and finish your graduate training?
The undergraduate training at West Virginia State was 1949. Michigan State, my graduate studies have been ongoing, but I think my training that I have received has been on-site training since I've been in this office or since I've been working.
Well, before we get into your work life, could I have a little bit of your family information? You're married. I know I've met your lovely wife.
Yes, I'm married. My wife, Olivia Letts, happens to be the first black teacher in the city of Lansing. In fact, I was courting her when she was denied admission to the Lansing school system. And she sent me a letter in rebuttal to my request for her hand that she'd never come to Lansing if she couldn't get a job.
Okay.
So, because she received a letter at that time that they had not making a practice, being she was in Chicago, her letter she received was, they never made a practice of hiring one of her race, but they would keep her under consideration. She sent that photo, that copy back to me, and I in turn gave it to some local people. Dr. Harrison, they had a men's group that met with some of the board members, and I too met with some people, and they asked her to reapply. So she was hired in 1951 as the first black teacher in St. Lansing.
That's incredible. They had black people living in Lansing, but no
no black teachers. Well, that's, I think that that's some of the history of Lansing that people are not aware of. We never had any black people in administrative places in City Hall. As I was a kid, the only black person in City Hall was a black shoeshine man who they called, he's our boy.
Right.
We never had any police officers. We never had any firemen. We had very few in state government over there, and very few, if any, in state government. So we did not have any individual of minority color that we could identify as a role model in the city of Lansing.
That's incredible. So your wife subsequently was appointed. And what year did you marry her?
The same year she was appointed, 1951. July 1951, she went to work in September of 1951.
And at this time, how did you meet your wife if she was from Chicago?
You're getting kind of personal, but I'll tell you.
Well, you can skip over that.
I went down to Chicago to a wedding, And she was superintendent of a Sunday school, and she had to be receptionist at this wedding. But she went home. And because she was so pretty, and I'd seen her cry at the table, I asked the person who was married, who was my friend, if they'd ask her to come back, because evidently she did not see those type of, you know, receptions that they have for a while. She went home. Mm-hmm. So they asked her back, and that's how I had to make her acquaintance. But then she sent me back to Lansing, because I thought I was a big shot, and she let me know that she was dating on the first occasion. So she did invite me back to a sorority dance about 6 months later, and we became very well acquainted and
attracted to each other.
So that's how it happened.
Long distance romance.
Long distance romance by mail. Oh, I used to go down on weekends.
Now this, you had already started your work life at this time. You were working.
Oh yes, I was working at a community center. When I came back, when I was at Michigan State, I volunteered service at a community center in 1947 after I was out of service and I was at Michigan State. And I used to work at Lincoln Community Center, volunteer work with young people. And when I left here to take the job and finish my education at West Virginia State, the city recreation department had opened up a position for me, but I left to go down to West Virginia State. When I came back, the position was still for me in 1949. So I worked at this community center, Lincoln Community Center, with young people from 49 to 65. And that's when I took this job. But in the interim, for about 2 months, I left the community center to go with the Head Start program. The first Head Start program started in Michigan. I was a member of a team that started the Head Start program for two months. And then the mayor, because we were having civil strife in the 60s, if you recall, 65, 64, the mayor asked me to come back and be rehired by the city as Director of Human Relations. So in 1965, I resumed my services with the city, even though I lost my 16 and a half years having worked with the city in Parks and Recreation.
Why did you lose?
Well, they say when you sever your relations with the city for any reason, you lose your seniority.
Oh, so they didn't have, like, now you can sort of buy that time back or something like that.
I bought my time longevity, but I bought my time frame for senior, that is senior, but not longevity.
Okay. So since you've been here since 1965, is it actually in this very same position?
Same position, 25 years.
I'm just amazed your office is still livable after.
Well, I've been on the fourth floor and up here, and as you'll note, over my years, my office has accumulated many things because I've been on many boards. In fact, right now, I should say I'm on about 25 boards and advisory boards, and state and national too. But I guess, as my wife said, I enjoy this type of excitement because it's a challenge. Every day is a challenge. Every problem that we have to experience with people is an enjoyable situation, especially if I'm able to resolve it. And I can make that person feel just a little bit better than they were before they called me. So that's the thrill and excitement. There's no thrill going out into the community when there's a civil disturbance and the threat of my life is at stake. But at the same time, when it's over and we have dispersed or defused a situation, a potential threatening situation, then I can rest easy and say I've done my part. That's the feeling I get with working in this job of doing something that maybe the success is not ultimate at the time, but the rewards of knowing I was there makes me feel better.
That you made some contribution.
But it is really frightening when I'm called out at 12 o'clock at night. And 2 weeks ago was called out, 150 people out there, and one young fellow was shot, and just shot a woman and a boy. going to Allegan and Logan. But Friday, Monday morning, the chief of police and his counterparts and command officers praised Dick Letts for coming out and help defusing that. So knowing that I was a valuable assistant to the police department and perhaps to the community, maybe somebody's life by defusing that situation, makes me a little more thankful that I was able to do it. But it was threatening.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to the beginning, say 1965, when you first came into this position with the city. I imagine you were the first black
administrator.
Administrator mm-hmm. for the city of Ramsey. How did you find it in those days being the
I have said, and I continue to say, as I've had to make statements recently, that I have experienced many intimidating, uncomfortable situations in dealing with the system. The system I speak to is predominantly white. When I find myself to be the only minority on a board, or the only minority to be an advisory board, you know, advisory board just sitting around to give advice to boards and community agencies, whatever it is, there are some individuals who are on those boards or in their presence who, with their body language, will not acknowledge. This has been over the years I've had. Recently, because I guess I've established some credibility, I'm very well accepted, I think. We're never too sure that the smiles on one's face is acceptance, because there are a lot of people with very devious, ulterior motives, even though they personally accept you at the first. So trust no one to the degree that their works are not before them and after them. So I have found Mary threatening, and threatening, and I say threatening in view of the fact that individuals with power sometimes finds way of trying to cut your legs out from underneath you, going behind your back, and they're very divisive. But it took a lot of determination. You see, I was a pugilist, and Carl Stokes, if you know it, my tribute, told you, I was a pugilist, and I learned from boxing, and I used to teach boxers, that you never win a battle by laying on a canvas. You must learn to get up and fight again. If you get knocked down, you cannot win because the referee will count you out. If you sit in a corner and try to rest because you fought a hard fight the minute round before, you cannot win that next round unless you get up out of that corner and fight again. So you must learn the same strategy I extolled in that type of thing with individuals I use myself. The idea of boxing is to parry, to thrust, to move, to catch, to block, to move. It's the same type of process that I installed in my boxers in dealing with society. You must learn to parry and thrust. A good defense is a good offense. To keep your opponent or adversary on their toes and on their heels is better than being on the defensive all the time. And so I found that in my struggles, being black, and as you're speaking to me now, I'm 68 years old, and having come through a time when even in service, in a uniform, I was thrown out of a bus station by a sheriff and the owner of that bus, where I couldn't drink out of a fountain in Alabama, when overseas they wouldn't let us go in English pubs, it has caused me to stand up and fight back. And that's why, in this day and time, I quietly fight back, because you never let your adversary know where you're coming from. And that's why you say, what was my experience? I have fought many silent battles, even though some blacks will still might perceive Mr. Letts and Uncle Tom because they're sitting in position in the White Tower, City Hall. Unless they come in contact with you and deal with you where you can help them, and it has been expressed, may on this taping may consider this, you may use it as a matter of fact, but you know, many of us are called Uncle Tom's, and many of us are called the white man's nigger. Mm-hmm. And so when I know that those I've helped and been available to help those who need help, I know it's worthwhile. being Uncle Tom or whatever. So you asked me my perception, and I'm sure much of this can be edited, but this is what's caused me to continue the fight.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of any particular incidences that happened when you first started, say back in the 60s? I know that it was a tumultuous time here.
Well, you can talk about the 60s. There was a tremendous resistance within personnel to when the 60s, but in the 70s, to get involved in affirmative action programs. Even some of my copies with personnel, when they were talking about they couldn't find qualified minorities, that old statement, they just don't come in and apply. But you know, affirmative action is positive recruitment. Where do you look for them? But yes, I've had some resistance, but although I've had some very strong supporters who had taken, for instance, our present mayor, was when he was on council, assisted in developing a group to from outside. He was on the personnel committee for council to develop a group for affirmative action program in the city of Lansing. But the system, some of the administrators were not too supportive, and we had a lot of flack from that. And until he became mayor, have I been guaranteed the full support for the affirmative action program. It was 1974 that we developed the first affirmative action guidelines and policies in the police department. They never had any black police officers and females. They had one or two, and over the years, for instance, my brother, the judge in Grand Rapids, 23 years on a bench in 1934, he was denied even making an application in the police department here in Lansing. Mm-hmm. So we have struggled. We've struggled to get men in the fire personnel, because years ago, it was even stated by a board, which many people will not remember, they wouldn't want to remember, but there were fire commissioners who said they would not bring blacks on the fire department because firemen have to sleep together. Mm-hmm. That was a statement that I so well know that they didn't want any firemen because they had to sleep together. So I have witnessed many things in this community that have served as barriers to progress, that have perhaps to some degree been set aside, the barriers that is, and there's been much progress. Mm-hmm. So you want to know about government progress? Yes, first 1965, first black. Since that time, we have a black personnel director. We have a female. Mm-hmm. We have a black female director of human resources. We have assistant city attorney. Mm-hmm. We have executive assistant to the mayor, black. These are position, administrative positions. Now we have many others, there's people, workers, that are scattered throughout the Lansing, I mean through the city of Lansing, in the fire department. We have a black fire chief.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at all those things, we have progress, but there are many who come into this day and time wondering, Lansing isn't doing anything, but where we've even secured many black police officers, we've lost a number because there's demand to move on to state police or to General Motors or security, and we've had a training program over the police department over here. We've lost numbers. Mm-hmm. Because they've gone on to better jobs, because when you get a good police officer or security, they're in demand. Mm-hmm. So people do not see the changes.
So the numbers remain relatively the same because people keep leaving?
Because they leave. We bring them in and they leave. They get training and they go out. Mm-hmm. And naturally with the unions they have in the police department, you have to acquire seniority in order to move up into the higher ranks.
Right.
We have now a couple sergeants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's three or four sergeants over there. And yeah, it's four because I just took on Dave Dixon. We have four over there, and we were a long time. Those individuals acquiring, now Bennett is the oldest one over there, but for whatever reason, he never wanted to move up, because you have to take tests too, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on the individual and their ability to take those tests and move up after they've acquired the 5 years service in order to move with the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a vicious cycle. Of course, remember, we have to deal with unions in this place. You just don't jump unions unless it's developed an affirmative action plan.
Mm-hmm.
We have affirmative action plan, but unions also have their affirmative action plan as far. And as you know, the courts have decreed that seniority will bypass, supersede affirmative action plans.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they've taken them to court. So I feel within myself, you know, people who come on the scene recently feel there ought to be more done. Yes, there should be more done, but you can't get it done sitting behind the seat and saying it should be.
Right.
You've got to work for it. Too many people who sit out there and give lip service to progress for minority equal opportunity and yet won't get involved and won't even get on boards where policy is made because it takes time consuming. What you asked me at the beginning, I have sat on boards that were time consuming. I have been on many boards where I had to use priority as to which board meeting I would attend when there was conflict, time conflict, as to where I could make the difference. But I was there. And when I found myself to be the only one, I voiced my opinion on what may be considered and has been said sometimes as the black experience. Because I've lived with minorities, associate with minorities, converse, and all like that, and sometimes I have the direct feeling of that I can speak many times of their concerns when, if I wasn't there, the concerns would not even be recognized. And I know that for a fact, because I know the system who has little knowledge or maybe even little concern for the minority population will not speak to it unless somebody else addresses it. There's other things they have as higher priority. And so as I speak to you, and if you're hearing me well, yes, I felt intimidated, but I did not sit quietly by the door.
Mm-hmm.
I voiced my concerns. It wasn't easy. Because when you get a person who may be a vice president of a corporation on a board, well, once you open your mouth and look down and say, well, what did he say?
Mm-hmm.
Look, as they're far more superior because they are vice president of Hudson or General Motors or some bank.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think their voices are any louder than mine. Mm-hmm. Or their concerns. So when you ask me, yes, I've experienced many hours of personal intimidation that no one would ever know, but I've kept on.
Well, in your development of the affirmative action plan for the city of Lansing, was that one of the initial assignments that you were given with the city?
No. Human relations has an ordinance. The ordinance deals with working in areas of tension, receiving complaints, investigating complaints of discriminatory factors, reviewing contracts and contractors doing and vendors doing business with the city, and ensuring that equal opportunity prevails. Over the years, equal opportunity has incorporated affirmative action plans, especially in federal programs.
Mm-hmm.
If the city of Lansing is involved in federal programs, then the federal government necessitates a mandate that you have an affirmative action plan in order to work with those vendors and corporations and others to ensure equal opportunity. The city council has also taken upon itself to pass a law that the federal law is dealing with preventing wage, will also be incorporated in city programs. So therefore, we monitor prevailing wage on the basis of federal edicts. We get a wage performance every month or every 3 months, whatever it is, and we incorporate those wages for contractors doing business with the city into their job. A lot of contractors don't want to pay prevailing wage because they're high. But at the same time, a person doing a job, they should be insured the same wage as anybody else, as they sometimes call the word scab laborers. Mm-hmm. But this is the thing we insure. So along the whole line is equal opportunity, performance of equal opportunity, and incorporated as affirmative action programs, mm-hmm. policies, plans.
Well, when you started working for the state, how did you find the city?
That's right.
How did you find the equal opportunity aspect? Did you have to sort of build it from scratch? Or?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. When I came to work in the city, hiring was sometimes made on the basis of walk-ins. Walk-ins were usually permeated by people who were already employed here. So they would tell their friends job was open. And they come in and they could make applications. And if their friends, cousins, or they get the job. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, they didn't get the job, but they were interviewed for the job. Mm-hmm. Naturally, if you're on the scene and the job's open, you make application, you're certainly going to be good. And because, you see, this is the most vicious thing in the past history. As there are no minorities on the job, then naturally if they don't, and then years ago they didn't do too much advertising for old job applicants, they just say you had applicants, you want to go on to see who make that vacation. And people who came and walked in, and usually it was the friends and nepotism and all like that who come in and got the job, word of mouth, mm-hmm. to make the application because the jobs are available. So they didn't have to worry about filling the jobs. But when it became affirmative action, you had to start recruiting, there was resistance to it because we got a list of people, candidates who are already here. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things, a person working on a job in City Hall will know that if this person says, well, you know, I'm going to do the job tomorrow, then they know that job's going to be open next week. So they can tell their friend, well, why don't you go make an application because the job's going to be open. Mm-hmm. So it was word of mouth. Over all the years of working, it's just common sense knowing that if they had demand for the job and supply was out, the supply was indicated by the people who worked through word of mouth. And if you didn't have any contacts down here, you never come down here. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the most vicious thing that happened in our society was when minorities would go, just like myself, would go to places like Oldsmobile or some place, they take your application. They may even interview you, may not interview you. If they don't interview you at the time, they say, we'll call you. And before you get out that door, you know, doggone, well, that application's going in file 13. They never call you. And if you call them back, well, our jobs have failed. So they had a way of personally screening out who they wanted to hire. And that happened. And that's a fact that sometimes the system will deny. But I know just as well, when you talk about hiring, they never call. And if you call them back, it's already been filed, filled. Mm-hmm. It's like this job here. I applied for it in 1964 when they opened it. And I was working for the Park and Recreation 16 years over there at Lincoln Center. 32 candidates. I'd gone to go to the World's Fair. And the personnel director says, well, you're in the running. He says, you've been working with one of the hire people's already here. You're in the running. There's only four candidates left that have been running. The paper even said, for, I wish I'd cut that out of the paper, but the paper said there's four candidates running. And this personnel director said, well, you're in the running. Don't worry about it. Not only that, he says, the only thing lacking is your transcript. The year before I was over at Lincoln Center, they didn't have to have a transcript to come to. I just know it's your college education. That's it. There was no transcript in my, because this personnel director came on after they started screening people for jobs. And when I went to World's Fair, he told me, go ahead, don't worry about it. They called a meeting on a Friday with this human relations board, and my nephew, Bill, who was on this board, had gone fishing. But he never knew I made application for this job. He went fishing. And when they had that meeting, they hired that Friday, after I left on a Tuesday, a school teacher who had little association, worked over in the schools over there. With my, he had associate in minority because he was a student in his class, because I used to have help with his problems. I used to go from mental center up there, and he had problems with family, things and like that. And they hired him as director of human relations. When I came back, I had a letter in my box saying they made a selection, that the Human Relations Commission had made a selection, that I still was under consideration. I came in this office a year later after Mayor Manningham told me they wanted me this job, brought me back in here after I left the Head Start. And found in the file, and that bill having somewhere in my file now today, an asterisk behind my name which said, question a college degree. Question a college degree. Now, if that's what they use for a record finding, they excluded me out. But in 1965, they come in and put me in this job as human relations director to the person who was here and moved him over in charge of housing. Mm-hmm. And I've been here ever since.
So they found that he was just inadequate?
We won't say that.
Well, anyway, they thought you were a better candidate.
He just didn't communicate with the community because we were having civil disturbances out there.
Mm-hmm.
We were having civil disturbances. They need a person in here in human relations who could go out in those tension areas and walk the streets and defuse the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a local person, been here all my life, people knew me, working in the center over there. And I guess I had established some turf.
Mm-hmm.
So those things transpired. That'll be a part of history, but nobody, it's not written either.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was other, I went to, that the other thing that happened, part of history, that in 1968, when there was riots throughout the country, and Detroit had their biggest burning in 67, I went on a vacation in the summer, and Lansing experienced some civil disturbance, and I was about in Mexico somewhere there, and Joel Ferguson, who had worked on playgrounds and was pretty well known, he worked with me many times out there and had basketball teams up at Lincoln Center. He went in the street with some of my youth groups I had, and along with Hugo Lundberg, who you see as a director, he was the chairman of this board, they defused some situation. And Joel also developed a name, and a year or two later he ran for city council, and he made it. He was the first black or minority city council person,
mm-hmm.
Joel Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
And by his contacts in council, Joel developed a working relationship with Washington and others. And Joel, when he got out of here, zoomed in the housing development business, and he was on his way. And now, as you know, he's one of the biggest developers in Lansing, television stations, and
mm-hmm.
all his things, trustee on the board of Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
Joel is making his way. But those are some of the things that happened that made progress in our society, and that's all history.
Mm-hmm.
History that my wife, first black teacher, and since that time, the cordons of minority teachers have followed behind her.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, I think they hired about four, and since that time, she moved on to become one of the administrators, director of elementary education.
Mm-hmm.
So, and look at Eva Evans. Eva Evans now is personnel, director, vice president of personnel over there. So our progress is very, I feel, much more advanced than when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody to look to.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. We got attorneys. We got two black judges here in City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
We never had those. We've got a black Supreme Court judge over there, Archer.
Unfortunately, I think perhaps is that for the most part, they don't come to anybody's attention. I would imagine many people don't know.
They don't. They don't know the progress. They see and don't see.
I don't even know if, unless you get into the system, core system, you may not even see it. You know, because there's not much mention of it in the papers and any other.
We have Grady Porter, who's been out there 15, 20, pretty close 20 years as a county commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
We have some representatives, but hey, just recently, the president of LCC Black.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, just recently, the publisher at Lansing State Journal Black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I sit here and talk to you, if I don't do it soon, my mind would not be worth a nickel. But all the names are just boom, come up to me. The progress is coming. Mm-hmm. As I talk to you now, I just said, Sykes, just this last year, mm-hmm. President of LCC, Black. The publisher, just 3 weeks ago, Black. Now, if that isn't, I forgot. Ernie Brown came to this town. You know Ernie Brown, vice president of Michigan National Bank over here?
I've only seen his picture with
Ernie Brown, vice president of Michigan. He's very slow. He's a light complected, and he grows as a Black person. Sometimes we have color discrimination within our own race. Mm-hmm. You know that. Some people will not really fully accept Ernie. Some are all Black. Ernie came from Detroit. Ernie ran against Coleman Young. And when he lost, he was a councilman. When he lost, Stoddard, when they had the controversy over there at all elections, brought Ernie to Lansing as a public relations person, vice president of Michigan National Bank. Ernie has come to Lansing, and somebody steered him over here to me so I could take him around and introduce some people. Ernie has been president of the Chamber of Commerce.
That's where I know his name from, the Chamber.
Yes, he's been president of the Chamber of Commerce. He's been president of Boys Star Boys Commonwealth. He's been president of Chief Oklahoma's Council of Boy Scouts here. He's been president of the City Club down there. He's president of the Chambers Foundation. He's also, like I say, vice president of Michigan National Bank Public Relations. Mm-hmm. Ernie has a wealth of contacts with people since he's been in this community at the top levels. He's been ahead of the governor's prayer breakfast. Mm-hmm. Ernie has made waves that have made the system recognize his ability. But Ernie in the Black community is not too well adopted, even with some of our local leaders, and I know that for a fact because I hear them talk. Mm-hmm. But Ernie has been the person to rock the boat. He started the Urban Advisory Committee with Scouts, which put me in charge of. And though I'm getting the credit for moving, and I did it because he opened the opportunity as president to have an Urban Advisory Committee, and I've worked hard to get it together. And I get the credit for it because I flew down to Texas at the invitation of the Boy Scouts of America office down there and asked them to accept, and I belong to the Alpha Alpha fraternity, to accept our scouting program, because we had a young scouting program, Mr. Heston chartered with Young Troop Corps of Scouts as a program for the fraternity. And I flew down to Atlanta, where they were having a national meeting, presented to the board of directors down there, and Alpha Alpha fraternity used the Boy Scouts of America as a youth project. And letters went out to all chapters that they should adopt a scout as one of the program. So they called it Boy Scouts and Alpha Alpha Fraternity Alliance Program. Mm-hmm. But Ernie started that urban scouting, and we are now a standing committee with Chief Oakham's Council, which is nationally recognized now. In fact, they've even put me on the Central Eastern Committee out of Chicago as Vice President of Relations, mm-hmm. under Ernie. Mm-hmm. But those things, we have to rock the boat. But Ernie's been a mover. All the people who've lived in Lansing have been members of the Chamber of Commerce, but never succeeded to the presidency that Ernie did. Those things are history. Mm-hmm. He's a person who, if you want something historical, what has he done? These things were done by a Black man that's never been done before. Chamber of Commerce. Well, anyhow. And, of course, we got Pat Shinsky's over there now, who's, I think her title is Vice President of Public Relations with Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. She's moved around. She's been in the United Way of Michigan. She worked with school system first. She was a teacher over at school system. And I think she became assistant principal. And she went with the United Way of Michigan. And then now she's back. Now she's over with the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. But these are progress in this city of Lansing, which is, I consider, maybe my personal observation is not so, conservative city. Mm-hmm. That's history.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've just about finished at the side of the tape. Oops. Yeah. Let's...